Fried chicken.
The Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. We've got, I believe, four bills on the agenda today. Members, we're going to take Senator Pappas's bill first. She should be down here shortly. There are several bills on the agenda today. A couple of them are a little more controversial than some others, but I think that we can get all four of these bills taken care of in the next hour and a half of our committee time. And with that, we're going to wait for Senator Pappas. She's chairing a committee upstairs right now. She'll be down, and we'll take care of her bill and let her get back to work. In the meantime, does anybody have a good story to tell or a good experience on Minnesota highways? Because I hear enough about the other kind of experiences, but... Oh, there's Senator Pappas. Senator Pappas, you have Senate File 2370.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry my witness wasn't able to make it, but I did pass out a letter from her to explain the problem that I'm here to talk about, and that has to do with illegally tinted motor vehicle windows. And it turns out, in short, that although it's illegal for people to own vehicles with windows that are tinted darker than the legal amount of tinting, and that's in 169.71 subdivision 4, it's not illegal to provide the tinting or to sell vehicles with the tinting. So my constituent ran into an issue where her son, as you can see in the letter, here's the letter. Her name is Tammy Filippi, sent her son to the company where they did the tinting and had a conversation with them and said, well, I don't want it to be tinted any darker than what's legal, and made that very clear, and it was going to be in the file, not to do it anything more than was legal. Well, he came back with a window that was tinted too dark, didn't realize it till he got a ticket 6 months later in St. Paul. So... the bill will prohibit the sale of a glazed window for use on motor vehicles if the glazing fails to comply with the requirements under the current law. And the House did come up with some slightly different language, and I discussed that with Ms. Baranofsky, and so that's the A1 amendment. And Mr. Chairman, if someone would put on the A1 amendment, that would put the bill into the proper shape.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Senator Scoy has moved the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye. Opposed. Aye. Motion does prevail. Senator Pappas on the delete all.
Mr. Chairman, that's really the story. That's all that we're doing is we're saying that you can't illegally tint the windows.
Well, thank you, Senator Pappas. Senator Pappas, and we spoke earlier, I have an amendment for your bill, which I think cleans up the other side of this. Yours addresses those people who put illegal tinting on today. Mm-hmm. Mine addresses the people who sell vehicles knowingly that have illegally tinted windows. And I would like to offer up the A2 amendment. I'm sorry, I can't do that.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A2 amendment.
Okay, thanks. Senator Scoy moves the A2 amendment. Senator Pappas, this amendment, like we spoke before, is in response to some concerns from a law enforcement official in my area, actually a member of the State Patrol, who has ticketed numerous vehicles with tinting violations. And every time that they do, they ticket the individual and they ask them where they bought it, and they say, well, I bought it, you know, at, mm-hmm. I don't know, Joe's Motor Company or whatever. And so he goes down to talk to them to tell them, hey, you know, you guys sold an illegal product, and they go, prove it. Mm-hmm. Prove it. And so these illegal transactions go on, and the dealer knowingly, you know, dealers know what the tint is supposed to be. They know what the safety devices are supposed to be and what they're supposed to perform at. Every licensed dealer knows that. That's what this deals with. This deals with a new or used motor vehicle or a motor vehicle that has been leased, or a leasor, I should say. They may not sell a motor vehicle at retail for registration in Minnesota, and that's the key here, for registration in Minnesota that does not comply with the vehicle equipment and material requirements under 16946 to .75. That's the vehicle code, Senator Pappas, that includes you know, a lot of the safety features on your car and the tint as well.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is broader than tinting. You're talking about any equipment that doesn't comply.
Senator Pappas, the equipment in .46 through .75, it lists there's a list of safety equipment that is in statute, and you know, every time that we normally update you know, a section of law like this, we normally clean it up to encapsulate all the safety equipment. But you know, this may seem like a small problem, but you know, this is a huge issue for law enforcement, especially the tinting. You know, I've been out, like many other members, and I think we got a couple of former county commissioners and some cops sitting around here. I've been out there just like you have, riding around with people, and at night, if somebody's pulled over and they've got that tint, you can't see inside the car. And when it's on the driver's window where you can't see in, there's a good reason why cops sneak up to cars with their gun half out of their holster. I would, too. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can't see in the car. You don't know what they're doing. And then when that same trooper who may have had their life put in jeopardy goes to the dealer and say, hey, quit doing this, and they tell him, prove it, you know, I just I have real heartburn for that. So now we're just going to say that if you that you can't do it anymore.
So, Mr. Chairman, then the only loophole that's going to be here are private sales. So there still can be private sales with these tinted windows. And, you know, mm-hmm. we should maybe think about if we want some kind of disclosure. But we could think about that down the road if it becomes a problem. Because someone could buy a car from a state where it's legal, Texas or probably
right.
Texas, right,
mm-hmm.
and still get ticketed.
Right. And that is an issue. And I've talked that over with some of the folks in law enforcement, too. And that's a tough one to get your arms around. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, thank you for bringing this forward. I did have an experience where my son, you know, adamantly had to have these tinted windows and assured me it was all legal, and then, in fact, it wasn't legal, and he did get a ticket. And so I'm glad we're making this change. And it also occurs to me that we should make certain that the driver's ed providers are updated as to this change so that they do a better job of letting our young people know that it's against the law.
And I don't, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what the process of that is, but I'm sure the committee could send them a letter or whatever you do. What do you do to update the driver's ed manual?
Well, we normally just ask the Department of Public Safety, and they mm-hmm. can take care of it. I mean, we can legislatively direct them to do that, but most of the time if we just work with DPS, it comes out in the wash. But
okay.
That is a good point. Senator Moi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have an amendment prepared, but I wanted to bring the issue to the table for discussion because I think that this is a really great bill. I know that I think current law prohibits us from doing anything with our license plates that obstructs the mm-hmm. law enforcement's ability to view or read the license plates. But we allow people to sell those really funky frames that, you know, you can put on your, you can personalize your license plates. And I've heard of constituents who've gotten citations for it, which is interesting that we, I mean, I think that's what you were going after here, is to say it sends a mixed message when we say we don't allow it, but we allow people to sell it. And so I think that the license plate frames are the same. But, I mean, what do? You go to every rest stop between here and wherever, and at every single rest stop you go to the little kit section, and they have all these funky things. So I see a similar problem with the little license plate kits. But
yeah. Okay. And Center Pappas, Center Moi, those are not supposed to be on your vehicle if they impair any portion of the, like the tab or, you know, that bottom portion of the numbers on your plate. And if they're a covered item, I believe, too, if it's got a plastic covering on it, that's illegal as well, because we all know what sunshine does to plastic. It yellows up, and then it kind of makes it hard to see the numbers. So that's Senator Perry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, as a former law enforcement officer, thank you for this bill. I've had occasion to walk up to vehicles with heavy tinted windows. I only have a couple of questions, just for my knowledge. How does this affect limousines, number one, and I did have one occasion in my career where we pulled over a brand new vehicle, and the manufacturer had windows in this vehicle that didn't meet our laws. Mm-hmm. I mean, have these two items been looked at? Just
Senator, Ms. Berezovsky, could you look and see? I assume limousines would be covered under whatever that provision is in the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, actually limousines are exempt from the glazing, window glazing requirement. Hmm. Side and rear windows of a limousine are exempt.
Thank you.
You might have identified another problem. And what was your other concern?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, it was we had pulled over a vehicle that was brand new, and it was actually manufactured with windows that were out of conformance. Have we looked into, is there still an issue with that?
Mr. Chairman, and I believe that under this law, the dealer could not sell that vehicle in Minnesota then. Excuse me, they'd have to retint the windows.
Senator Pappas and Senator Perry, you know, those tinted windows are always an add-on, and you get to pay for them when you go to buy your car. In Minnesota, the dealers know that they can't be buying mass quantities of these cars with the tint. They already know that. Sometimes they take trade-ins, though, where they have the tint, and that's kind of how this cycle starts. It's not so much on brand-new vehicles. But, you know, if you talk to a lot of people who deal with the auction market, a lot of those cars coming through there have, you know, they're violating the statute, and, you know, they get sold, and hopefully we'll kind of curtail a little bit of that. I mean, if people want to auction cars that came out of New Orleans from 3 years ago, you know, maybe they, you know, hopefully they won't creep into our state anymore. So
I thought the back windows were different.
Further discussion on the Pappas. I'm sorry, did we?
No.
Okay. Senator Scoy renews his motion on the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Scoy moves that Senate File 2370 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Senator Scoy. Oops, sorry. Senator Scoy, Senate File 2614.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before I turn to Amber and the folks that are with me, I'd just like to say that Senate File 2614 is an effort on my part to maintain the current status of liability for semi-trucks and trailers. And I've heard a lot of discussion about the history of this and the background of this and whether this was caused inadvertently or not and whether it was a renumbering problem. And all of that doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that as a farmer, if I go to borrow my neighbor's trailer, that I am the agent and responsible for that trailer, and I would have to have the liability insurance on that trailer, but my neighbor would not. And so that's the practice that we've had in Minnesota for the last 30-some years. I would like it to continue, and that is my effort here with Senate File 2614. And so with that, turn this over to Ms. Bacchus from the Minnesota Truckers Association.
Senator Skoy, before Ms. Bacchus goes, you've got an amendment here.
Should we
just go ahead and put that on? So
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is the first stop, so I would move the A1 amendment.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Skoy, Ms. Bacchus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Bacchus, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Trucking Association, a statewide organization representing motor carriers of all sizes and the vendors that serve the trucking industry. Last year, legislation was introduced on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice and passed by the Senate, and it's a bill that would turn liability in the trucking industry on its head. Essentially, it would split a tractor and a trailer into two separate motor vehicles for liability purposes, and we'd like to ensure that does not happen. I have with me Doug Graw of DART Transit, who'd like to discuss the problems with imposing liability on trailer owners for responsibilities that they do not have under the current regulatory framework. A motor carrier is responsible for the safety fitness of the driver and of the vehicles. The load is moving under the motor carrier's authority, and both the liability and insurance requirements follow that framework. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Graw to provide more details.
Mr. Graw, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Doug Graw. I'm in-house counsel for DART Transit Company, a trucking outfit down in Eagan, Minnesota. And I'm here on behalf of DART as well as the Minnesota Trucking Association. Thank you for granting me the opportunity to speak. In its most basic form, the intent of any liability scheme is to make those that actually cause damage be responsible for that damage. And that's all this bill's aimed to do, is to keep in place what we've had in place for quite some time. Motor carriers are the ones that have control of the drivers. They're the ones that inspect the equipment. Each day, drivers under federal law have to inspect their equipment, which includes the trailers, to make sure that those trailers and those trucks are safe and ready to go for operation. If lights are out, tires are low, brakes are worn, those kinds of things, the driver is not to operate that equipment. Okay, motor carriers inspect, they maintain, they repair all the equipment. They make sure they meet the legal guidelines. The trailer owner relinquishes control over the trailers while they're in possession of the motor carriers. Motor carriers accept that control, and the drivers are deemed agents of the motor carriers. In the event an injury is actually caused by the trailer, this doesn't do anything to prevent an injured party from going after the trailer owner. The trailer owner, if they in fact have done something wrong, can still be held responsible. All the common law torts are still in place, and this bill does not impact that. And that's what our system is basically based on. It's about holding those responsible that actually caused the damage. Trailer owners don't select the drivers. Trailer owners don't maintain automobile liability insurance. And when you loan your boat trailer to your neighbor, you don't expect to be held responsible for whatever your neighbor does while he's holding that boat trailer. Changing this law could impact that liability. We respectfully ask that this committee to uphold the common standard and support SF 2614. Otherwise, I'm free to open up any answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Graw. Are there any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of this bill. I'd just like a clarification. In a scenario where somebody cuts a corner too sharp and they run the trailer over the front of a car, the trailer theoretically causes the accident, but it's the operator of the vehicle that's not operating it correctly. So under that scenario, the trailer wouldn't be. It's only like if the accident happened because there were bad brakes on the trailer. Is that correct?
Mr. Grohl.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's a very good question. In that type of scenario, the motor carrier itself would be responsible. The motor carrier, it's the motor carrier's actions when he drove and took that corner improperly that really led to that accident. In DART Transit's history, we've been around since 1934. A handful of times we've had some claims that comes against us for something the trailer itself did. Generally speaking, that's a tire blowing out on the rear trailer, and they'll say you didn't inspect the trailer well enough, in which case we as the motor carrier accept that responsibility. Our driver was supposed to inspect that trailer, make sure that trailer was safe. He didn't do it. The motor carrier accepts that liability.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Briefly, Senator Olsen, do you have a Class A license?
Yeah.
Remember when you took your Class A test, how you're supposed to do the vehicle inspection prior to leaving? I mean, you're supposed to check the tires and you're supposed to check the brakes. That's part of the driver's responsibility to ensure that the vehicle is safe before they leave the yard.
Well, thank you, Senator Skoy, and your testifiers. Mr. Jepson is here, I believe, from Minnesota Association for Justice, maybe to give us a different opinion or a different perspective, I should say. Mr. Jepson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do.
Well, Mr. Jepson, can you move the mic away from you? You know, most of the time we're saying, move the mic closer because we can't hear you, but you know, the folks downstairs that take care of all of our equipment, they came in here and they debugged this area. Now, if you're talking in the back row, your voice is going to be on the tape, just so you know. Mr. Rudin. And anyway, Mr. Jepson.
I hate to differ with Senator Coe, but the law of the state of Minnesota was, up until 2005, consistently that the owner of the tractor and the owner of the trailer were both responsible when a combined unit was involved in an accident, and the courts consistently refused to get involved in trying to figure out, did the tractor cause the accident, did the trailer cause the accident? They consistently said, this is a joint vehicle, and it's the responsibility of both. In regards to farming, in 1994, Melchert versus Melchert was decided by the Minnesota Court of Appeals, 519 Northwest 2nd 223. Alfred, the father, and Jonathan Melchert were farmers, and they were doing some haying. And Alfred went and borrowed Lillian Jacobson's pickup truck and took it into the field and hooked it up to a hay trailer. And they were loading hay into the trailer, and another gentleman got involved. And he was throwing hay bales, sort of Mr. Troy Cook, and he hit Alfred Jacobson and very seriously harmed him when he was trying to load the trailer. And the Court of Appeals said that the owner of the pickup truck and the owner of the trailer are both responsible. That has been the law of the state of Minnesota until 2005, when the 45th page of a bill that dealt with the Government Data Practices Act, there was a simple little change that said a part of Chapter 172 should be renumbered to Chapter 169. That was the last remaining section in Chapter 172. And after that, that portion of Minnesota statutes disappeared. Over the years, that chapter had been amended, removed, repealed, and there was just the only thing that was left was the Safety Responsibility Act. In 1974, when the legislature passed the No-Fault Insurance Act, it repealed the portion of the Safety Responsibility Act that defined what a motor vehicle was. And up until 1974, the Safety Responsibility Act did have a definition of motor vehicle, and it included the trailer language. When the legislature passed the No-Fault Act, it repealed that definition, leaving just the Safety Responsibility Act. But the No-Fault Act contained the same definition, which included the trailer language, and our court made it very clear time and time again that it was clear that the legislature intended the definition in the No-Fault Act to be the definition for the Safety Responsibility Act. I got involved in this in August of 2005. I met a young lady whose husband was very tragically injured when he was driving a motorcycle northbound on Highway 65 just south of Mora, and a tractor pulling part of a modular home southbound hit an overhead wire and pulled it down and ripped him off his motorcycle. He was airlifted to North Memorial Hospital, and after two major brain surgeries, his wife had to make the agonizing decision to disconnect him and let him die. She was able to make a claim against both the tractor, the insurance on the tractor, and the insurance on the trailer because her accident happened on July 30th. That renumbering took place. It was passed in June. It was effective August 1st, 2 days later. The bill that you have before you is not doing what, at least by my reading of it, is not doing what the author proposes. It is not going back to just liability by the owner. It says very clearly that the owner of the tractor and the owner of the trailer are both jointly responsible, except when the owner of the tractor allows somebody other than the owner to drive it, to drive the tractor. And then it is only the coverage on the tractor that is responsible, not the coverage on the trailer. So now if my client, who had this, whose husband had this tragic accident on July 30th of 2005, if you pass this, it's going to be the luck of the draw for her. If her husband had been killed by a tractor driven by an owner, she would have the coverage on the tractor and the coverage on the trailer available to her. If it's driven by some permittee of the owner, she only has the owner's coverage. That's what this bill does. It leaves it completely up to the vagaries of who's driving the vehicle to determine how much coverage is there. That should not be the way things are done out on the highways or in our judicial system in the state of Minnesota. I don't know why we would have liability of the tractor owner and the trailer owner when the trailer owner, when the tractor owner is driving, and we would have liability of the tractor owner if a permittee of the tractor owner is driving, and no liability on the insurance coverage of the trailer. One thing I would like to make clear is I'm not here trying to get a double recovery for my clients. I'm here trying to protect insurance coverage that's been available to my clients for years and years and years until 2005, not to give them double recoveries, but to give them adequate recoveries. Our courts do not allow double recoveries. That doesn't happen. But our courts do try to allow adequate recoveries, and I would hope that that's what the legislature would do. And have this bill not pass and have the correction of the mistake that was made in 2005 undone so that there are adequate coverage for people who are catastrophically injured and damaged as a result of collisions involving tractors and trailers. There already have been a number of people between 2005 and now who have had catastrophic injuries, who have had significant insurance coverage that used to be available to them, denied to them, and that should not continue.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mr. Jepson. And in the case that you talk about, the young woman who lost her husband to the tragic accident, everybody around this building understands that sometimes there are unfairnesses, but and we all sympathize with those who are tragically injured or killed in one way or another. I mean, I think this committee has shown time and time again their overwhelming concern for traffic safety. With that said, I only want to address the fairness issue. And how fair is it to basically penalize a trailer owner when they're not behind the wheel? Here's and use the example that of your client. The operator of the vehicle is the person that was responsible. He's the one that's supposed to be in command and control of that vehicle. He operated it improperly. Now, we've got a bill that's moving through the legislature now that would increase the penalty for someone who operates improperly. And it should no longer be a misdemeanor. It should be something higher than that. Because when you use your vehicle, whether it's a truck or a car, improperly, and you hurt someone, there should be a result. We all realize that. With that said, it's the operator of the vehicle who decided to drive that vehicle in an unsafe manner. They're the responsible person. It's not whatever it is he's driving. That's got nothing to do with your client being injured. That's the fairness part to me. That trailer has nothing to do with it. Unless they violate these statutes that say that the brakes got to work, the lights have to work. If that's the case, then granted, go after those people because they allowed an unsafe vehicle on the road. But if the vehicle is safe and it's operator error, the operator should be held responsible. There should be none of this. We're going to sue somebody because we think that they were 10% liable. I just don't understand that. In this case, you have a clear person who was responsible. They chose not to be responsible.
Mr. Chair, the law of the state of Minnesota has been that the owner of a vehicle, whether it's a tractor or an automobile, is responsible for the acts of the operator when they permit somebody to operate it. If you loan me your car and I hurt somebody, you're responsible, I'm responsible. That's the law of the state of Minnesota. It has been for decades, and that has included the combined tractor-trailer for decades as a vehicle, and we have made the owner and the operator responsible. If that's unfair, you should repeal the Safety Responsibility Act in the state of Minnesota and release owners of vehicles from all liability and make only the operators responsible. But that has not been the law of the state of Minnesota for decades.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr.
And then
Chair.
Senator Jungbauer.
By its inherent nature, a trailer is following the cab. And I just called the shop and talked to one of the owners because part of our business is trailer rental. And when they sign up to rent a trailer, it's recognized that there's an unspecified insurance on that. So they don't have to sign like a release form that they're having insurance on the trailer because that's already understood. That's my understanding is that when they sign a contract to rent that trailer, they're providing the insurance through the either the company or whoever's providing the tractor that's pulling the trailer. There's a trailer cannot move when it's not being pulled by a tractor. So I don't understand how there can be a liability on the trailer, except as we've talked about, if there's a failure in the brakes or a failure in a mechanical system, that it can be the trailer's fault. I mean, a trailer's not a person or anything, but it's a thing that's following the tractor. And the damage caused by something with the trailer is because of what's happening between it and the tractor. It can't be separated. And that's why I'm having such a hard time with your argument.
Mr. Chair, Senator, this is not about the fault of the trailer. This is about the fact that the owner of the vehicle is responsible for the acts of the operator. And when we have a tractor and trailer that is combined, the courts and the law of the state of Minnesota for decades has been that that is one vehicle. And it's not that the trailer is at fault. It's that the trailer's owner is a part owner of this combined vehicle. And owners of vehicles are responsible in the state of Minnesota without being at fault. So it's not a question of fault. It's a question of responsibility of owners of vehicles for the people that are moving them. And the court has always said that when they're the tractor and trailer are moving together, we aren't going to pick apart which part of this combined vehicle is at fault. If the operator is negligent and it is causes an accident, the owner of the vehicle is responsible, and in the case of a tractor-trailer combination, it's the owner of both. They are responsible for the operation by that operator. It's the operator that's at fault.
Mm-hmm. Let's, Senator Skoy, did you want to address that quick? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I honestly don't know how two people can read the same words and come to such differing conclusions, but hopefully Ms. Backus can shed some light on this, because if you could let her respond, please.
Mr. Chair and members, we don't have an issue with including a trailer as part of the motor vehicle. What we have an issue with is including the tractor and the trailer as two separate motor vehicles for liability purposes. As the trucking industry operates and insurance is set up and interchange agreements between shippers and carriers and contracts with leasing companies, all of the responsibility of the trailer falls on that motor carrier when that trailer is hooked up to it. So we don't have a problem with vicarious liability if the driver is someone besides the owner of the tractor, but it all resides under the owner of the tractor, not the trailer. And I have a little bit of a problem with the legislative history that's been shared with the committee too on this issue. In 1945, when the Safety Responsibility Act was created, it preceded all sorts of insurance laws for the state of Minnesota and had this vicarious liability provision as well as other financial responsibility. No fault came along in 1974, as the other witness said, and almost everything was stripped out of Chapter 170, the Safety Responsibility Act, and put into the no fault statute, except for this driver deemed agent of owner provision. From 74 until 2005, it was hanging out there without any sort of statutory definition. There was some case law in those years, since there was no definition of motor vehicle, where the courts did use 65B, that includes a trailer. But again, those weren't cases making the trailer owners, I understand it, responsible for the actions of the driver. And then in 2005, when this change was made, it wasn't something that happened in the dark of night that nobody had the opportunity to respond to. This provision was part of a driver and vehicle services policy bill, Senate File 1504 and House File 1352, that clarified many provisions relating to traffic accidents and reporting. There was no opposition to the bill, and the Senate Transportation and Judiciary Committees passed the bill, including the language moving the vicarious liability statute to Chapter 169 unanimously. And part of the impetus for the bill, according to testimony provided by DVS, was to put traffic accident information into the section on traffic regulations. So again, you know, we're fine having the trailer be part of the overall motor vehicle, but just not considered separately for liability purposes.
Thank you, Ms. Backus. I know that Mr. Clavin wanted to get his perspective on part of the, I believe, the corn growers or the. While he's coming up, Senator Jungbauer, you had a comment, I believe.
Well, I think several of them, Mr. Chair, and for Mr. Jepson, I guess I'm a little taken aback first because I've been here on this committee for 8 years, and people know that I like to do my homework. So when you come in here and you quote one piece of case law and give us where it came from, and then you randomly say, well, other ones, people weren't able to find their justice, I think that's a bit disingenuous. You said, well, people couldn't get more money based on the 2005 law and stuff, but you didn't give us any specific cases. So I think it's incumbent upon people when they come before this committee or any other committee, because on every other issue that's before us today, people on both sides came to my office. They gave me their side of the story so that I could research it, so that I could be ready for a committee. So I'm taken aback that you come in here and start saying some things and randomly say you have one case on your side where you quoted the case, and then when you say, well, people were actually injured by this, couldn't get better recoveries and things, but you don't give us any cases in point to look back on. Or I have my computer here. Had you given me those, I could have looked them up and actually seen if they did actually fit what we're talking about here today, and that's the kind of legislator I am. So I'm going to say shame on you first, because you should have given us the homework so we would come prepared to discuss the whole issue. Don't just come here and randomly say something. So I'm a little bit angry about that. So I'm sorry. I shouldn't get angry, but But I do think, and obviously I'm pretty vocal about some things, you can tell, I do think in some ways the courts have been wrong in saying the trailer is equally responsible. I haven't seen those kind of case laws in when a car is towing a trailer, or they've put some kind of liability on the trailer if you borrowed it from somebody else or rented it. So I think the court doesn't equally do these things. So I do want to see the case law. And I think there's other ways to remedy, but Senator Scoy, I do see in line 1.21, I may actually kind of agree 1.21 and 2.2, where we talk about and not an agent of the owner of the trailer portion of the motor vehicle. So I do see where that could get a little dicey when it comes in front of the court. So maybe we need to look at some of that. So I do try to look impartially on these things and see what both sides might have to say. But in terms of recovery and whether people get a fair recovery for injuries or things, it occurs to me that some of that might fall back on insurance requirements and other things, and I don't know that you know, would necessarily be part of this. So I just want people to come before us and tell us where the problems are, and but don't always assume the court is right. So.
Mr. Clavin.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bruce Clavin. I work with a number of ag groups here, in particular today, the sugar beet growers. I also talked to the Farm Bureau, who I don't represent as a registered lobbyist, but they're not here, and they asked me to throw their name in for the record in support of Senator Scoy's bill. Just two perspectives maybe from the farm side, folks maybe aren't thinking about. A number of growers out there will have trailers they own, and they'll hire a commercial driver for a week or two in the fall to pull that trailer. And I'm new to the issue. I didn't research the 2005 thing and the court case and the hay wagon and all that stuff that's been cited here. But as we looked into the issue in the bill from last year and this one, that became a concern that the farm could all of a sudden be on the hook for the cargo that it was carrying when it was the driver's fault. But the second issue, and maybe even more important for us, would be the borrowing of equipment that happens on the farm. The guys share a lot of equipment out there. It's very expensive, and it's very common to share pieces of machinery with neighbors. We had a wet fall last year, and there was a lot of broken trucks and drive shafts in the mud, and it would be very common for me as a neighbor to have 60 acres left, and the snow is coming, and the ground's going to freeze, and I've got 60 acres of potatoes left, and my trailer goes down, and I call up Senator Scoy. I know he's got a live bottom, and I got a wet kit on my trailer, and I can hook up to his. And he says, sure, take my trailer. And I use it for the day, and all of a sudden there's an accident by myself or a driver on my farm. His farm is on the hook now if this bill isn't passed or the court case isn't changed. So I don't think he intends that when he shares the trailer with me, but all of a sudden now he's on the hook through a simple sharing arrangement, which would be very common on the farm. So I just want to lend that perspective to the committee as you're considering this bill. We support the effort.
Thank you, Mr. Clavin. Any further questions from the committee? Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that Senate file number 2614 be recommended to pass and referred to the Commerce Committee. Senator Scheid has requested that the Commerce Committee take a look at this bill.
Senator Scoy has moved that Senate file 2614 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection. Senator Scoy, it also needs to make a stop in judiciary as well, and maybe Mr. Jepson can come again at that time. That's kind of the appropriate place where we talk about those issues of liability. On this committee, we're just talking about issues of responsibility, basically. So, with that, on the Scoy motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. The bill is passed.
Senate file 2261, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Members, Senate File 2261 is a household good movers tariff requirements repeal. I'm going to give you a brief overlook of what I know of this system, and then I'm going to let Mr. McGrath take care of some of the rest of the testimony, as well as Ms. Schaefer, who has done a lot of work on behalf of the Institute for Justice. And members, first off, the household good movers provisions have been around for about 100 years?
1957 is when this bill was enacted, Chairman Murphy.
Okay, I'm feeling pretty old right now because I think that's when I was born. There hasn't been very many changes to the legislation over the years, a little tweaking here and there. But the overall issue is the industry has changed, and it's changed substantially. A lot of the practices that this bill holds of what the current practice is some reporting requirements. And it's also supposed to be a bank of where people can go and get information about household goods movers and, you know, kind of what the experience is from individuals. And thank you. But the crux of the issue is here that we've built this system that's no longer used. Now, this is a place where people can file complaints. They can check tariffs that charges that, say, household good mover A in Bloomington, and then they can go over and check household good mover B in Edina, check prices, see who's more competitive. But you know what? Of all the people that call in to find out whose prices are what, it's one industry checking, it's one business checking on the prices that the other business has. There's very few. As a matter of fact, 2 years ago, I know for a fact, there was one consumer call, one, all year long. So we have built a system that basically is theoretically self-policing, where you can only get into the system if the people who are already movers let you. That's a heck of a way to do business. Think about that. I'm retiring here at the end of this year. And say my son and I want to start a roofing business, Murphy and Sons. And we decide to go out to the Department of Commerce and get our license and become a business and everything, and then have them say, just a minute, we want to check with all the other roofers in the state of Minnesota before we let you get into business. That's what goes on here. And we want to change that practice so that we can have more competition in the system, not less. With that, I'll let Mr. McGrath take over.
Senator Murphy, members of the committee, my name is Lee McGrath. I'm the executive director of the Institute for Justice, a free market public interest law firm that is headquartered in Arlington, Virginia, but I run the Minnesota chapter. I'm here with my associate, Catherine Schaefer. I thank the committee for the opportunity to testify in favor of Senator Murphy's bill, Senate File 2261. It has become an economic truism that small businesses create jobs. And when the legislature has an opportunity to make it easier for small businesses to form, grow, and employ more people, the legislature should seize it, I submit respectfully. Senate File 2261 presents a small opportunity toward those ends. The bill is very small, and it repeals the requirement that household goods movers, in-state household goods movers, file papers with MnDOT that list the rates that they tell MnDOT they will charge their customers. It's a paper filing requirement. And the bill ends MnDOT's responsibility to receive those rates and store them across the street. No other mode of transportation has this requirement. There are three important reasons to support Senator Murphy's legislation. First, movers do not use these rates to quote their customers. Second, movers do not update these rates. And thirdly, movers, MnDOT does not proactively enforce compliance of these rates. They're, in essence, the current requirement in these statutes serves no purpose. Importantly, this legislation does not reduce consumer protection in Minnesota, because papers filed and stored at MnDOT do not protect consumers. The state protects consumers in other ways. Rules, for example, Rule 7800.2000 requires moving companies to give consumers a bid before the move occurs, and that consumer protection is unaffected by this effort. And that consumer protection eliminates the possibility of the alleged bait and switch problem that is often stated as occurring. What this bill does do is that it increases price flexibility. It allows for more competition. It allows movers to offer discounts to senior citizens, to students, and to frequent users. It allows movers to compete for customers the way every other industry in this state does, which is by offering the best value of high quality and competitive prices. I thank the committee for this time and ask for your support of Senator Murphy's Bill 2261. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGrath. Ms. Schaefer? Please identify yourself for the record.
We are happy to answer any Ms. Schaefer has done some research and is happy to answer any questions, but she does not have prepared testimony.
Would you like to entertain questions at this point?
I would be happy to, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, let's move on.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, there are a list of other testifiers who would like to testify, I believe, in opposition to the bill, so we could hear from those folks.
Senator Murphy, we actually have Professor Frohman in favor of your legislation. So.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Professor Frohman, please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Jerry Frohman. I'm an associate professor of marketing, transportation, and logistics in the Applied Economics Department at the University of Minnesota. I'm also a U of M Center for Transportation Studies faculty scholar and University Extension Specialist in Transportation. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of Senate File 2261, a bill that removes the archaic regulations that require Minnesota household goods movers to file tariffs with the state DOT. Please note that the comments and opinion expressed here today are my own and do not reflect or represent an official position of the University of Minnesota. I have been a student of transportation economics and transportation issues since the 1960s. Consequently, I have followed the transportation deregulation debates that started during John Kennedy's administration and culminated with the substantial deregulation of air, rail, and truck at the federal level during the Carter administration. Household goods carriers were subsequently deregulated at the federal level a few years later. Economic deregulation of transportation meant allowing the free entry of firms into the business and the freedom to set prices. The state will still regulate all aspects of vehicle safety and provide fundamental consumer protection laws. That is, the state must issue permits, set rules for safety, insurance, limits on work hours, vehicle inspection, and use its authority to enforce contracts to protect the public from fraud. Transportation economists and economists generally almost unanimously agree that there were tremendous benefits to the U.S. economy and our national well-being resulting from transportation deregulation. There have been extensive studies and documentation showing and recording that major benefits accrued from cost and energy savings, improved and more flexible service, and new and innovative products. I encourage and urge the committee to pass Senate File 2261. The current requirement that household goods movers file tariffs with MnDOT is an unnecessary cost to the firm and to our economy that does not contribute to the state's ability to protect the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Frohman. And Senator Murphy, we have some testifiers in opposition.
Yep.
And I believe we have a Mr. Paul Lentz from Bester Brothers Moving and Storage. Please state your name for the record and then continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Paul Lentz. I represent Vester Brothers Transfer and Storage, and I strongly oppose this legislation. There seems to be some confusion regarding the word tariff. In the context of household goods moving, in the state of Minnesota, tariff really means publications of the fine print of the contract for each and every household goods move. If these publications are the true and accurate documentation of services, rates, and conditions that the consumer can legally rely on. The circumstances and conditions surrounding individual moves can widely vary. Eliminating publication requirements of the terms and conditions would force movers to write individual contracts for each and every different individual move at a much higher cost to the mover and consumers. Vulnerable consumers could sign such an individual contract written only to take advantage of them. The current laws have been fine-tuned over the last 50 years, and we have reached a good balance for consumer protection in a system that works for our industry. There has been no outcry from consumers or the industry to change our laws. Minnesota has a system that works. Why change something that works so well?
He's not presenting it, though.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lentz. Any questions for Mr. Lentz? Senator Youngbauer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lentz, I just kind of like to ask you, because you talked about how the contracts are standardized to protect the consumers, and how would you compare that to other things? Minnesota does a great job in terms of consumer protection, and I owned a building and real estate company for many years where we have contracts, but when we go out as a builder, we look at each job, and you kind of indicated certain moves are a little different than others, and there are some standardized things, but why would we have a problem if people are out looking at the move and actually coming up with a contract that pertains to that move? Why would that be different than a builder bidding on every different job because it's different?
Mr. Lentz.
I suppose it wouldn't be any different, but in terms of the way it works today, it makes it much more difficult and expensive to go out. Let's say I'm just moving a piano. I have to write an individual contract for a piano as opposed to writing an individual contract for a four-bedroom house with five residents. We're doing all the packing. We're providing boxes and the move. There's such a wide variety of services that we provide. It would change the way we do business today.
Senator Youngbauer.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lentz, that's what the rest of the world does that has businesses. I mean, we have a different contract for every different job. We provide a lot of different services. It just seems that in a free market, I'm a free market kind of guy, it just seems like that would be the way things should be. So,
Mr. Lentz.
When you work in the moving industry, you actually take the belongings of every individual that you work for into your possession for a short period of time without them having access to it. You also work with a lot of, I'll call them vulnerable individuals, because they've lived in their homes for 40 years. It's a very emotional time. And if I go into their home with a smile on my face and a slap on their back, I can convince them of just about anything. If I publish my rates openly, that person has recourse to say, okay, this is what I should be charged, as opposed to me designing a contract for them, have them sign off on it, and fall into trouble that way.
And one more question. And
Senator Youngbauer.
I mean, everybody that comes up could answer these questions as well if they think they could kind of fine-tune them. Under the current system, is it allowable to go and say a vulnerable citizen or somebody that's losing their house? Can a company that's a normal, I believe the term we use today is a registered household goods mover, can you go and provide a service for free if you think that's in the best interest of the client or the community to go help people like that under the current law?
Mr. Lentz.
I believe it is. About 5 years ago, the governor was involved in changing the law that at that time had prohibited movers from doing charity work like you're referring to.
Thank you.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lentz, My family has used Best of Brothers, and your men were very professional, and they did a great job.
Thank you.
I'm also a co-author of this bill, so I'm glad that you're here, because I have a question that maybe you or some of the other people can help me with. Part of the reason why I went on the bill was that I found the study that Mr. McGrath and his staff did to be compelling. And that was that they did a survey that showed that 80% of the movers that were surveyed actually did not quote based on the filed rates. They also said that the filings were not kept up to date, and that MnDOT did not proactively test the validity of the filings. And then the third finding, I guess, has something to do with MnDOT, so we can talk to them about that. But if the reason for the filings is really supposed to protect the public, but if the rates are quoted differs from what's being filed and then it's not being kept up to date, then how is it benefiting the public if the public can't even rely on the information that's filed?
Well, Mr. Lenz.
Thank you. I can only speak to the way we do business at Best of Brothers. Typically, when we get into a conversation over the phone, we won't, you know, come right out and quote the rates. Our goal is to meet in your home, because every move is different. So we want to look at what you have and the volume of stuff that you have, the types of services that you're requiring before we go ahead and quote that move. If somebody came right out and asked us what does it cost for your hourly charge, we would quote off our rate. I can't say that in our industry that in the last year, when the survey was probably done, when business has been hit quite hard because of the economic downturn, on top of the housing market that has been slumping for several years, we may have salespeople out there who have quoted something other than those rates, but I assure you that those quotes were probably based on the rates at only a reduction, certainly not at an increase from the rates that were based on tariff rates.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Moy.
Mr. Lentz, and I was not part of the negotiations for the contract that my family had with your company, so I don't know, so that's why I'm asking you. It's not a gotcha question. But when your representatives go in to work with the families, is there at any time in those conversations a reference to the rates that are filed with the state?
There is.
Mr. Lentz.
And that's what we'll – and that's how we'll talk about rates – in a phone conversation as well. It's an easy way for a consumer to check up on the rates that we're quoting. And in fact, when we go into somebody's home and say that person is having two or three prices given to them, I think it's in my best interest to point out the fact that, you know, they should check with MnDOT to see that the rates that they're being quoted by other moving companies are the true and accurate rates that they're representing.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Vester, I'm not sure who is appropriate to ask this question, but if it's about accessibility of information, has there been any discussion of filing these electronically and MnDOT having them available online so that people would have access to looking at it rather than some pieces of paper stored somewhere?
There has been.
Mr. Lenz.
There has been, and our association has and our business has urged MnDOT to do that.
So, and Mr. Chairman, can you file
Senator Olson.
Do you file them electronically?
We do not.
Mr. Chair?
Any more questions? Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lenz, what do you make of Senator Murphy's assertion that only one person in the last year even checked on it? What's your sense about that?
You know,
Mr. Lenz.
Thank you. I don't know the statistics. I don't check up on how many people check our filed rates. What I do know is that we as a business encourage people to check up on our filed rates and on our competition's filed rates.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Lenz, I had a similar question to Senator Olson's. That was kind of where I was going. So in order for a consumer to get that information, they would have to call MnDOT? There's no place they could check online? Is that the only way they're able to access that information?
Mr. Lenz.
My understanding is they would either have to call MnDOT or go down to the Department of Transportation building.
Mr. Chair, could somebody from MnDOT come to the table and answer those questions?
I think we are going to have someone from MnDOT come. We have four more testifiers in the opposition, and then I believe we already have some questions for MnDOT.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question of over here?
Senator Arkin.
Going back and forth. thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lenz, is it your position that the bill that's before us today is anti-competitive? If we pass that, it would make it harder for you to compete? Is that what you're saying? And if so, why?
Mr. Lenz.
No, thank you. I'm not suggesting that it would make it harder for me to compete. I'm suggesting that it would make it a more costly proposition for us and consumers.
Senator Ortman.
Sure. You're saying that moving services generally increases the price of all services for consumers, for me if I call.
Mr. Lenz.
What I'm suggesting is that if I have to write that contract for each and every individual, whether it's a piano or a four-bedroom house with all the variables that go into that, it's going to increase my cost and ultimately increase the cost of the consumers. The other thing that I'm concerned about is that if we don't have these published rates for the consumers to view, it opens up the opportunity for what we call rogue movers to come into our industry and provide services that may lead to fraud. In states like Florida, where they've done just what's being asked to do today, the problems that they have in states like Florida, Texas, Maryland, they just pale in comparison to what we have in Minnesota.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the points that you just made, Mr. Lenz, what would stop you from, I mean, you talk about writing a new contract for each job, but what would stop you from just establishing a standardized contract for a given type of a job and communicating simply what the provisions of that contract are to the customer, you know, at the point at which they're inquiring about using your service for their move? I mean, it seems like that would be an easy way to solve your administrative difficulty. I mean, that's the way a lot of other businesses handle engaging customers. They just create a standardized contract and, you know, maybe provide some options within that contract for the customer to pick and choose from, but, you know, maybe a one-time expense of kind of standardizing your contract and Xeroxing it off, and, you know, and then creating a little signature line, little check boxes and a signature line.
Mr. Lenz.
Mr. Chair, if I could defer answering this question to Mr. Marcus, who's just joined me at my left. Mr. Marcus is the chairman of Minnesota Transport Services Association.
Mr. Marcus, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. My name is Howard Marcus, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Transport Services Association. I guess I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask the senator. I was walking up here when he was asking the question, and I don't think I got all of it.
Well, I have two
Senator
questions.
Dibble.
My first question was the point about writing individual contracts for each particular moving job. I can imagine that if you're writing from scratch a new contract for a simple moving job, that would be timely and time-consuming and expensive. I would imagine that there'd be a simple administrative remedy to that dilemma, which would be to create a standardized contract for a given type of a move, maybe even creating some options within that contract, communicating it in plain language to the customer, and allowing for a signature. I'm not understanding the great expense that's being cited, other than maybe perhaps a little bit of expense at the outset to create a standardized contract and to Xerox it off.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble.
Mr. Marcus.
I guess the best way to answer that now is presently what the tariff is it's actually an addendum to the contract or representation of the contract. It lists all the duties and responsibilities and rights of each of the parties involved. Okay. Taking that and removing the filed portion of the document, removing the document, getting rid of it, means that the carrier will have to reproduce something like that. Could they do that on a regular basis? Yes, but they would have to go out and they would have to have go through a 20 or 25 page document with each of their customers, and there would have to be there would obviously be deviations for it based on the type of jobs. It would be quite costly, and it would be very time consuming. At least that's the way I'm looking at it. I don't know if there's a different opinion.
Yes.
Can I introduce myself to the committee?
Sure.
My name is Michael Gorgon. I'm chairman of the MTSA. I'm also owner of a Two Men and a Truck Moving Company franchise here in St. Paul.
Mr.
Gorgon.
Gorgon. Okay.
Euler.
Mr. Gorgon and the other testifiers, before you leave the table, be sure to sign in on the testifier log.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we're on the log.
And now you can continue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I'd like to address that question real quick. The big difference is, and this kind of leads back to Senator Jungbauer's question about whether everybody else has contracts. You alluded to real estate contracts. And Howard said basically, Mr. Marcus said, echoing Mr. Lenz, that we'd have a problem there with a 25-page contract for a $250 transaction. Do you get lawyers involved in a contract such as that? Do you get lawyers involved when you lease a car for $35,000? It's a one-page document there. So there aren't apples-to-apples comparisons for moving, and I think that's hopefully is answering your question a little bit more of why don't we do it that way. We do it that way. We seek the remedy of being able to file with the state all these things ahead of time so people can review them ahead of time, because I wouldn't want to fill out or even eyeball 25 pages. I hated signing all the documents to buy my new house. They're required, had to do it, but I wouldn't want to do that. It's all there ahead of time. You'd address the question, Senator Olson, also earlier, if this could be done electronically. Actually, we met with MnDOT last year about this exact thing, and they just didn't have the budget at the time to be able to publish this. But what we do have out there for the public consumption are these same rules and regulations on our Attorney General's website as it sits today. You'll go through and you'll see 8 or 9 points that you should do as a consumer. You'll go and tap Consumer, A to Z, Moving. They'll bring you to a certain web page, and just so you know, that web page shows you. It's a one-pager, real easy for people to see. I have copies to pass around if you'd like. It highlights all the things that right now these regulations do let the customer do. Like, check and see if this customer has filed, is licensed. That's a good one. Let's check and see if they're insured and bonded. Do they have vehicles? And if so, are those vehicles also registered? Those are good things right there. Be sure that you understand the terms of the moving contract. Again, out there, we both presented in person, as Mr. Lentz said, and it's also there for the public to see. This points people in the right direction electronically. Unfortunately, there's not a single click and point. MnDOT says that's on their radar to do as soon as they get funding for it. And like we said, we're all for that, as are some other industries. Did that address that question, Senator Dibble?
Senator Dibble.
Well, yes. I mean, it doesn't all add up to me, because it seems like other businesses are able to perform this function for themselves. I accept the answer. I mean, it answers the question. I don't know if I fully accept it. And I had a second question.
Senator Dibble.
There was the concern about rogue carriers coming in and providing substandard service, but I think we're not taking away from MnDOT the ability to regulate carriers and the relationship and, you know, other kinds of duties, responsibilities, and, you know, basic provisions in the public's interest. So we're not taking that away from MnDOT. So, again, I'm curious to know why this piece is necessary.
Mr. Chair?
To address that issue.
Mr. Gorgon.
Thank you. To address that question, we're not talking always about physical entities. We're talking about vapor out there right now. It's very easy to use Senator Murphy's example of Joe's Car Sales, only this is Joe's Internet Moving Company. And you go out there and you sign up to move my 3-bedroom house, and it requires a $200 deposit, a nominal deposit. My estimated total move might be between $800 and $1,000. I put that down to reserve my time and date at the end of the month, get a nice slick receipt from Joe's Moving Company. And on the 31st, I call my mover, hey, they haven't confirmed, but where are they? Well, Joe's Moving Company number is no longer connected. These aren't just truck and trailer operations. There's actually, when you let people in, and I would say to Senator Ortman's comment, is this anti competitive. It is if you're not playing by the rules. You know, that's what we're at right now. So too many movers have we seen come in, and too many moving companies have we seen aren't brick and mortar, don't have a truck for MnDOT to pull over and check and say, hey, by the way, what's in the back of this? Let's see your bill of lading. What are you moving? Household goods? Oh, where are you going? They can check all that while they're still validating that this truck has got the correct that their brake's been checked, that the driver's even filled out a daily form ahead of time, a truck inspection form. And law enforcement doesn't like to see that either. They don't want rogue movers with trucks on the road who aren't checking things out and doing things the right way. But most definitely as a consumer and part of the greater good, no one wants to put down $100. And you know what? That may be caveat emptor, but what if 1,000 people do it? Because they said, what a great deal. This looks slick. This website all checks out. Everything checks out. They got a BBB logo down in the corner. What's nice is it's hard to do in the internet cloud world is we've got legislation on the books that work to keep those things out already without having to overly regulate it. So the only thing this regulates right now is to keep out businesses who are unethical.
Out-of-state business. Well,
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Again, I mm-hmm. I feel like the provisions of this bill are a little more narrow than the situations and circumstances that were just described, and I think you know, shady operators can come in today and do. I mean, and I'm sure they do. So that's true today. I don't think it'll be more true tomorrow if this bill passes, because I think there are provisions for MnDOT to continue to regulate and oversee some of those issues that you just described.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Marcus.
If I could just take a swing at that just for the fun of it, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
Senator. Please come closer to the microphone.
Don't stay away. Come closer. I'll get it right eventually. One of the things we have to consider, the tariffs are a part of a system. It's not just, if you look at the statutes, you could probably pick and choose. I don't like this statute. I don't like that statute. You know, we can get rid of this. It's old, whatever the case may be. But if you look at it as part of a system, and it's a system that works well in Minnesota, as evidenced by the things that we have very few complaints and things like that, it's one of the things that companies, bad companies, unethical companies, they don't like to be in the light. They don't like to have to do anything more than they have to do. This is one of the things that prevents these type of people, or at least defers these type of people from wanting to come into Minnesota. We have regulations in place. There's a government agency that has a true and correct copy of your rates. It gives them a little bit more consumer confidence, I guess, more than anything else, that there is somebody else involved. It's a disinterested third party. But if you take the component pieces, you could probably start throwing away all sorts of things. But if you take it as part of a system, it's a good system that works. It's a fair system. The industry, it's fair for the industry, and it does provide consumer protection. The entire package provides consumer protection. I wandered around, and I've talked to a few of the senators, and I apologize if I'm going to say something they've already heard, but to me, it's kind of like an engine. You're going to take pieces off of the engine, especially if you don't really know whether or not the pieces have any value. Take the pieces off the engine, and then the engine stops working. So you have two choices. You've got an engine that worked before, so your first choice is you either fix the engine at a cost or you replace the engine at a greater cost. If you have a system that works, why do you want to take it apart? I apologize to the committee. I thought I was on the list to testify, but apparently I'm not. I do have some prepared remarks I would like to say that I thought might help a little bit. People understand things a little better, but
Ms. Moss, we're going to have to move along. We've spent quite a bit of time on this bill, and we still have three testifiers who are on the list, and I have a list of four senators that would like to ask a question.
Sure.
So I'm going to ask senators to be as concise as you can. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to now, if the word gets out that no consumers check on what's at MnDOT, then what would stop people that were going to do some funny business from getting on the scene? And if they do pull that, what consumer protection is available? Does the consumer have to go to, you know, some kind of civil proceedings to try to regain what they've lost? Or does the state have to go after that party because they didn't file their tariffs? Is it the state's responsibility to chase down and find the folks, the culprits?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator Olson, Do you mind if I respond?
Sure.
Okay. If the consumer files a complaint with MnDOT, MnDOT is responsible for investigating the complaint and determining whether or not there's been a wrongdoing and then taking whatever the appropriate action is. If MnDOT is taken out of the picture, if there are no more tariffs filed, whatever the case may be, and it's dealing with rates, MnDOT's going to basically be out of the picture, and then I believe it would be litigation. It'll just end up civil litigation. And then you're going to have to depend on whatever. Depends on whatever rates are out there or whatever they can find or whatever's. It's going to be very difficult. It's going to be very costly and difficult for the consumer. I hope that's answering your question. Well,
but Mr. Chair, I was puzzled as to why that isn't happening now. If nobody is checking on it, what is keeping the unscrupulous out, given that there doesn't appear to, well, maybe we need to ask MnDOT how many of these kinds of cases they have to chase down.
Yes. Mr. Chair,
Mr. Marcus.
Senator Wilson, I think, among other things, what's keeping these people out are the fact that Minnesota has requirements that if a person wants to hold themselves out to be a household goods carrier, they have to comply with them, and among these are the tariff. There are people out there now that are operating without registering with the state of Minnesota. As these people are found, basically what's done is we bring it to the attention of MnDOT, or somebody brings it to the attention of MnDOT. MnDOT investigates it, and then basically what we do is if these people are brick-and-mortar businesses, in other words, people that are actually operating in the state of Minnesota, hiring Minnesota employees, paying their taxes, et cetera, we explain to them, or MnDOT explains to them, what the requirements are and basically says, would you like to get into the system? They say no, then it's MnDOT's responsibility to do whatever MnDOT's supposed to do, fine them or whatever. As for tariffs themselves, tariffs are kind of a well-kept secret. We've recently started on our website, the MTSA website, as well as the Better Business website, and MnDOT, referring to tariffs, telling people that they exist, telling people that they're filed, that they should check the rates and things like that. Our organization is very small, and we had a very limited budget. We still have a very limited budget, but we finally got some money together, and we decided to change the website, and this is one of the things that we thought was important, to let people know that there is a recourse out there and let people know that there are filed rates and the rates are checked, and they're true and correct. I hope that answers your question, sort of.
Senator Olson, just one thing that I guess I'd like to say is that the bill is removing that requirement to file. It does not limit the commissioner's power. So the commissioner still has the regulatory power as before. So the commissioner can deal with these issues and has the responsibility yet. We have three more senators that have questions, and I'm going to ask you to please be concise. We are starting to move into the timing that we've reserved for the next bill. So Senator Culp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'll hold my question for MnDOT.
Okay. Senator Youngbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll give some quick oversight and ideas, because the more information I get from the testifiers, the more I think that this bill is a good thing. And I'll kind of compare it to plumbers, heating guys, builders, remodelers, licensed through the Commerce Department or Dolly. They actually have, the consumers are more protected. There's better recourse. There's part of the licensing is recovery funds. You guys indicated that prices would go up, and yet research we're looking at here says we have the highest moving rates in the country, so it's hard to imagine they'd go even higher. The statement here is 30% higher than the national average. As an industry, even with a small industry, why wouldn't you move more towards licensing individuals and getting rid of this protectionist, government protectionist type of a legislation that's pretty outdated? I mean, that's the way I'm looking at it. Come alongside the rest of other industry professionals that are governed by the state yet. But there are bad players in every industry, whether you hire the wrong carpenter, the wrong plumber, guys working on the back of their trucks. Why not move towards something else that's more 21st century if you think that this whole idea of having people all in the same parity in terms of home moving, why not move into that kind of a classification instead?
Would someone like to answer that concisely?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Senator Youngbauer, good questions. I think part of the problem lies in the initial testimony from Mr. McGrath that states that we still have a protest restriction, meaning that anybody, it's a barrier to entry. That was actually removed 2 years ago. So we don't want to bait and switch like somebody who wasn't licensed to do something might. So that's gone. We did move into that. Matter of fact, that represents the 50 years of refinement that these regulations currently have. There is no study out there at the national level or at any level that we've ever seen or heard of that shows a rate comparison of state to state. As far as I'm concerned, like you chastised some people earlier, that's undocumented. I don't have, you know, all those details. Being disingenuous with the facts is still being disingenuous. And lastly, if you take a look at our rates, they're what's called a rate or permissive free market filing. We've got multiple companies represented here, all with different rates, all with different services. And it's not just a matter of we each offer the same hamburger. Some companies choose to offer a hamburger with pickles. Some choose to offer it with onions. Some offer the works on there. And you pay for what you choose. What's nice is it's already out there plain and simple, and you don't get hit with a special excise tax or something special that just snuck up on you because you didn't see it coming. It's got to be plain and simple out there. I think we've been working, and Mr. Marcus had said before, to get that information out there to the public.
I think before I call on Senator Moi, I'd like to say that we have three more testifiers here, Mr. Harrison, Mr. Allison, and Mr. People. And I want you to be on deck and ready to go because we're going to go real fast here. So, Senator Moi.
Pass, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick comment with regard to the document passed out by the Office of Attorney General Lori Swanson. And there's, it looks to me, something that's misleading on the document, and I want to address it. It looks like, based on this, that we are making changes to whether or not a mover needs to be licensed, and I don't believe that this bill has anything to do with that.
There's nothing to do with that. I'm sorry. I don't know what you're looking at.
Oh, I'm sorry. Part of that also points out in that same piece. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gergen.
I should have highlighted that better. This was kind of thrown together at the last minute. I apologize. We just found out at this meeting yesterday. It also mentions vehicles, and as I mentioned before, to Senator's double question, a lot of times we're dealing with vapor out there, not brick and mortar, not tractor trailer trucks, but actually the perception that these all exist via websites or via letters, things like that, dropped to the public. So to be able to check out not just licensing, but that there's vehicles registered, how is someone going to perform your move would be gone. The licensing, you're right. You could technically file and say, I'm going to open up a shop for business with no intention of doing business in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, this feels a little bit like propaganda to me, so I will let the Office of Attorney General know that.
Absolutely.
It doesn't seem like it really is consistent with what I'm looking at before me, so thank you.
Ms. Chair.
Senator Moi.
Senator Bonoff, I don't know that. You're not saying that the Office of the Attorney General's Office made this document, right?
That's what I thought.
No. We should make that clear. Mr. Chair, I think this document was passed out by one of our witnesses, and the pieces that were deleted from the after, you did that, right?
That's correct.
Oh.
So this document actually is given to us by the witness. This is using the example from the AG's office. So the before is information that was on the AG's website. The after, our witness deleted and played with it.
So. Mr. Chair, Senator Moth, thank you very much for clarifying that. I don't appreciate getting a document like that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to address that real quick. Senator Bonoff. I apologize. That was not meant to be a misleading piece. It was taken from and before and after what would happen should these things be repealed. In theory, that's what happens.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to understand what you're trying to accomplish. And if I hear you right, I think what you're saying, tell me if I'm wrong, that you want these standards to stay in place because you're using them in a sales approach to legitimize what you do, that you follow state standards, you're available for to be followed and tracked through your business filings and things like that, and then you're using that to compare yourself maybe to some other business that doesn't go through that process, and that if you take away the requirements of licensure and regulations and things like that, it will be hard for you to distinguish your company from a fly-by-night or an illegitimate, fraudulent intender that's coming into Minnesota to grab that business. Is that what you're saying, that you're using these to legitimize your business?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, I would say they help legitimize the business. They help build trust. Moving is a trust-based business and is the only business where we come into your house, we take everything you own, we put it in our truck, and we drive away. I think you'd want to know that that's something. And unfortunately, in the states that have deregulated to this regard, you see a lot more complaints, and you see a lot higher unresolved rate because there is no budget, there's no follow-up, there's no consumer recourse. And trust, if the industry suddenly isn't trustful at all, then that is a burden upon all of us to try to figure out how are we going to do this, because before, it's there. Now it's no longer there.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up. So then what you're saying, Senator, is you want to be able to tell your customers that you have a good relationship with the state of Minnesota, you're in good standing, and they can trust you. And that there should be criteria out there for customers to evaluate good, reliable movers, if I'm following you.
Mr. Girgin.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Senator Cook.
And so then I would just follow up, Mr. Chair, that it would be really, if we, depending on what we do with this bill, but I think online information for consumers would be very helpful. I think maybe where some of us are stumbling is that this seems so difficult to obtain and onerous for the consumer.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dahl.
If I might, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's what the Better Business Bureau is for, though, isn't it? Do we need to have a state website to put all this information on when we have a Better Business Bureau? And it's
our Better Business Bureau.
So.
Mr. Chair and Senators.
Commissioner.
I'm Dana Badgerow. I'm the president of the Better Business Bureau.
Can you bring the... Ms. Badgerow, can you bring the mic closer to yourself?
Yes, I will. I just want to give some additional data that might be relevant to your decision. Okay. I have to just give just a moment's worth of background, but I want to explain what the Better Business Bureau is and is not. We are a nonprofit established here in Minnesota. We were the first one in the nation, established in 1912. And what we do is, and our mission is to foster a marketplace where buyers and sellers can trust one another. So the discussion around trust is particularly relevant. We do a number of things, including handling complaints, 25,000 of them last year on behalf of consumers. We have no enforcement power. We do that through mediation, conciliation, arbitration, and basically the power of persuasion. We do have a 98% successful resolution rate of our complaints. However, we have do many, many more things than handle complaints. Our single biggest piece of benefit to the consumer and to businesses in Minnesota is to provide information. 1.6 million Minnesotans visited us last year asking for pre-purchase information on a variety of companies. We do have 75,000 companies represented in our database. We have detailed information on 59 moving companies in the state of Minnesota, but there are 125 others that we have a slight bit of information on, and we're not quite sure where those companies are operating or how they are operating. 35 of the 59 are, in fact, accredited by the Better Business Bureau. But I just want to give you just a couple of facts. One of the things we do is we support industry groups. We are a self-regulation entity. We are against government intervention for the most part. Industry groups come together under the auspices of the Better Business Bureau and establish standards. The moving industry is one that has done that, voluntarily come forward, and we are just about to issue our tips for consumers. We're hoping to pass them out, in fact, at the state fair for people who are about to move. One of the pieces of information in that brochure is, in fact, to check with the Department of Transportation to see whether the person you're about to deal with and entrust your household goods to is, in fact, at least known by the Department of Transportation. I just want to give you one bit of experience. I think we are blessed in Minnesota with a particularly good record of consumer treatment by the moving industry. Our complaint history for the moving industry stands out nationally as one of the best. We only had 44 complaints in 2009. We actually had 96 the year before in 2008. But when we contrast that with the Sister Better Business Bureau's experience in Florida, for example, which is an unregulated state, they experienced 1,183 complaints in 2007, which is a year in which we only had 75. So the moving industry is doing something right in the state of Minnesota. We believe at least one factor, and that is that consumers and the BBB have a way to determine whether the movers are licensed, their rate schedules are transparent and public, and that consumers have a place to turn besides the BBB, who has no enforcement power, when they are treated inappropriately by a mover. Consumers are, in fact, often at their most vulnerable when they're facing a move. They're in a foreclosure, an eviction, moving out of an old family home, worried about damage to their prized possessions, and they need ready and available resources to ensure that they're not preyed upon at this time of stress. So I think that whether or not it is being used is a fact that needs to be determined by this committee, but I can tell you that it ought to be, and we refer consumers to the Department of Transportation all the time. We do not have the auspices or the resources to file this kind of information ourselves. We do have information on each company, but we don't obviously publish their rate schedules. We have information in terms of their years in business, their complaint history, whether, in fact, they are licensed, but I don't think we would be the proper entity to look to for the tariffs.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry I didn't get your name, but the question is, are you making the correlation that because we have regulation in this state, that's what's causing this big difference between Florida and Minnesota?
You know,
complaints?
I don't know that. I just know that the experience in Minnesota is different from the experiences in Minnesota, in Florida and Maryland, where it has been unregulated. So I favor any program that is going to assist us in our effort to protect consumers against predatory pricing, unreasonable or confusing terms and conditions, fly-by-night movers with no established business track record. And I think the program under challenge in this legislation is one of the tools that can help us in our work.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for members who are new to the committee or don't know, this is former Commissioner Badgerow, who was Commissioner of Administration. It's so nice to see you back at the Capitol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonner.
And I think the sentiment that you're hearing around the table is a sense of inadequately using what maybe is in place, and, I mean, partly by revealing that it's not on a website, it's not known by Minnesotans at large. People aren't accessing this information. So I really appreciate that Senator Murphy brought this forward and the other co-authors, because it seems like there's an issue with what is currently in place, and we look forward to hearing from MnDOT and understanding why that is.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, and good to see you again, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Wouldn't it make more sense if we were going to have regulations, and it's kind of interesting, kind of ironic to have, you know, small businesses come and say we like the regulations that the state has in place for us. A little unusual, and that may have caught some of us by surprise here, but wouldn't it have made more sense to have the regulations on the Department of Commerce site or somewhere other than MnDOT? I mean, I can't imagine that if I were looking for a moving company, I would think, well, let me just check into the MnDOT. And not even on their website, let me call MnDOT to find out how the movers are doing in Minnesota. It would never dawn on me.
Ms. Badgerow.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, I think you're probably right. The system at the Department of Labor and Industry and Department of Commerce works extremely well. We refer consumers to those agencies all the time. But after all, this is a transportation activity. I think Senator Bonoff has pointed it out extremely well. It's a system that really ought to work better than it does. But I think without it, we only have, by analogy, experiences in other states where totally without this government framework or construct, we know that the complaints rise exponentially.
Thank you.
Can I make a comment on that, too?
Yes. Mr. Girgin.
Senator Ortman, just want to make a quick analogy. I used to have mice in my basement. 3 or 4 years ago, we'd find a mouse every couple of days. I got a bunch of mouse traps, and I laid them out. And the first couple of weeks, I found a lot of mice. And then the next couple of weeks, I didn't find so many. And now I don't have mice in my basement. But I still check the traps every once in a while. It sounds like, and that's why we're here, maybe the traps need to be moved around a little bit, but not taken out of the basement again and let the mice back in.
Ms. Badgerow. Ms. Badgerow.
I'm a business man. I don't lie.
Certainly an analogy.
Ms. Badgerow. Do you have mice? I have a question for you. When you say you are referring people to check in with MnDOT, how do you do that when we're talking about this information is not online?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senators, that's a really good question. I mentioned, I think, 1.6 million contacts last year by consumers looking to make a pre-purchase decision. This is either by phone, fax, email, primarily actually by phone. And we refer them, first of all, to our own reliability reports on the company. But we also encourage them to check with whatever the relevant government agencies are that regulate that particular industry. We regularly ask them to suggest them to go to Department of Labor and Industry, for example, in the construction. We want consumers to be as well-informed as they possibly can. Well-informed consumers are protected as consumers.
And in this particular case, what we're saying that will no longer be required to be filed is a shortcoming, you think, in your ability to refer people to the right information?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess, Senators, I'm stopping a little bit short of that. All I can really say, I have objective evidence that what is happening in Minnesota today under the current construct, which is a partial government framework, is working extremely well. And by comparison, it is not working well in Florida, which has removed these kinds of filings.
Senator Moy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, members, I'm a little bit concerned about the conversation here because I don't think that the bill necessarily is targeting at undoing the regulatory construct that we have here in the state of Minnesota. The bill is not doing that. The bill merely eliminates an unnecessary requirement for the companies to file their rates with MnDOT. And the reason why I find that compelling is that it was rationalized as the filing of these rates is supposed to protect consumers and that protection depends on the industry filing a rate and sticking to that rate. But what we heard is that actually the way it works is that the rates are referenced as a frame of reference. But the way practice is in the industry is that it's on a kind of a case-by-case basis because people don't know until they come to your house, tour how much furniture you have, that they can actually quote you a contract. So I don't know how useful it is to file these rates when I go to the rates, but I then know for a fact that from company to company, they'll have to come visit and do an assessment before they can quote me something that I can depend on. Secondly, the consumer protection depends on MnDOT enforcing that companies are somehow sticking to their rates. And we hear that MnDOT is not doing that. And then thirdly, it depends on the public knowing about it and being able to access the information and be able to use it to protect themselves. And the public doesn't know about it, and there's no way for the public to access it. So I just think that from a consumer protection perspective, if we all are in agreement that we like the idea of consumer protection, that's a separate conversation to be had, and we ought to think about how our regulations could be strengthened and work with the industry. Certainly, the individuals who are here to testify on behalf of the industry are good operators, or else they wouldn't be here. But I don't think that's the issue. The issue is that the elements that is supposed to make this work for the consumer don't work. And so why are we requiring people to continue to do this? And the longer we talk about this, the more I'm starting to feel like this useless system is a default way for the current operators who are big enough to be able to do this work to protect their turf and barring other people from entering the market. And I don't want to go in that direction because the mechanism here doesn't seem to work. The operators who are using it, whatever they're using it, says it works. But from what I've heard, it doesn't work. So if it doesn't work and it's not protecting consumers, then we shouldn't say that that's what it's doing.
Senator Bois, I'm going to ask the counsel to give just a brief history because she gave that to me just a second ago, and it really it explained a lot as to where this came from. what the history is in the background.
Oh, Mr. Chair and Committee, I just commented that there used to be in Minnesota statutes a complete state regulation of motor carriers in general, and the federal government then preempted the field and carved out a few little exceptions that the state, where the state could still monitor tariffs and rates, and household goods movers was one of those exceptions that was carved out because of their unique or unusual direct relationship with consumers and homeowners and so on, people who might not otherwise be familiar with the system. And so that's why it's in MnDOT, for one thing, and that's why MnDOT is allowed still to exercise this kind of control over household goods movers, where it isn't anymore monitoring tariffs of other kinds of motor carriers.
Senator Murphy, do you... Did you want to bring MnDOT up to answer any questions here?
Well, if MnDOT wants to come up and answer any questions, or they can, Mr. Chairman.
Does the committee have any further questions? I believe we're ready to vote.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to hear from MnDOT.
Senator Olson said she would like to hear from MnDOT.
All right.
Mr. Briggs?
Mr. Chairman and committee, here's what I can tell you. I've listened to the discussion kind of go back and forth and everything, and, because of the education that Mr. McGrath and his group have given to me over the years on this issue, I'm not an expert, but if you pick up this piece of paper right here, I think this tells it all. And if you look up here, this was a survey that was done. It's this paper right here. It's got some highlights on it and everything. And no, we need to have staff pass those out, if you could have staff pass those out. But anyway, up at the top, there were all these movers were surveyed. 4 out of 20 movers' estimates matched what they actually charged. 12 of 20 movers' estimates were higher than they actually stated. 2 of 20 movers were less than actually stated. And 2 of 20 movers refused to even quote over the phone. Now, 12 of 20 movers, their estimates were higher than their filed rates, than their filed tariff. 12 of 20. Now, there were 100 calls into MnDOT over the last year about, whose tariffs were doing what. Well, actually, there was 112. There were 100 mover-to-mover inquiries, one mover calling about somebody else's tariff, and there were 12 calls on people calling to see what mover X was charging. 12 people in the state of Minnesota utilized this service. Members, if we don't pass this bill today, I can tell you what's going to happen. In the supplemental budget that we're bringing forward with MnDOT, there will be a big goose egg, and I'm sorry, there will be a big goose egg to continue on this program. We're gonna eliminate it one way or the other. The other thing that I wanted to talk about really quickly is, this paper was passed out, and as members of the Minnesota Senate, we should take offense to this. This is false and inaccurate information, and it's filed in front of a committee where you're supposed to come and tell the truth, the whole truth, not the truth. I mean, we don't ask people to swear in front of our committee because it's known that you're supposed to come to the Senate committee and tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. This is not true at all. There is nothing in this bill that removes the licensing, insurance, or safety standards of this industry. All those things are going to say, what are we doing? We're removing this bogus tariff filing. It will add competition. Now, you heard from one of the folks that was up here earlier that was testifying against this bill. Several years back, the same group or the same company that he now represents was fighting to get into the business, and they wanted us to pass this bill. Now, once in the business, guess what? We're going to throw our fence up, and we're going to protect this industry. This will allow people to get discounts, senior citizen discounts. Senator Bonhoff, you know about moving your kids to and from college and the expense behind that. They will be able to offer a student discount. And if we're going to ask men, if we're going to spend more money in MnDOT to police this activity, which is unconstitutional, and if I would have ever known that we were spending this kind of money to police this activity, I would have eliminated it 18 years ago. This is something that Senator Arata and I worked on feverishly with Department of Vehicle Services and several other groups to get them off the gas tax because it's unconstitutional. We have a constitutional responsibility to pass this bill. Now, Chapter 10 of the state's constitution says what that gas tax money can be used for, and it's concrete, rebar, state patrol. It's not policing an industry that doesn't need to be policed. So, members, I'm going to let you hear from MnDOT, and then we're going to vote.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good argument.
Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
My name is Ward Briggs, and I'm MnDOT's Director of Commercial Vehicle Operations.
Mr. Briggs.
And I'm just here to answer questions. I was out at a carrier's place of business until just a few minutes ago, so I haven't been here for the entire hearing, and I don't know what issues have come up, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Olson, did you have a question?
Well, Mr. Chair, what do you do?
I'm in charge of the office that oversees all of the credentialing of motor carriers, of issuing oversized overweight permits, of auditing carrier safety. We work with the patrol and with the federal government on safety issues.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
What would the provision, have you examined this bill, or what would the provisions of this bill, how would that affect what you do?
Mr. Briggs.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, this would eliminate the responsibility the carriers currently have to file rates and tariffs with our office. Our office does have a rate and tariff analyst that receives these when they're filed and reviews them to make sure they're filed according to law, so this would change that. This would make that duty go away.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at this testimony from Mr. McGrath, which says that MnDOT does not proactively enforce compliance of these rates, and then you just heard, of course, the presentation from Senator Murphy. Is that statement true? I mean, do you do these kind of spot checks or compliance checks and find out if, in fact, the rates being charged are consistent with the rates that are filed?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble,
Mr.
no,
Briggs.
We don't proactively enforce this part of the law.
Thank you.
We do respond to complaints when they come in, but we receive very few complaints.
Any further questions from the committee? I think we're going to apologize to the other testifiers who are on the list. Senator Murphy, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy moves that Senate File 2261 be recommended to pass and move to the floor. Any questions on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed?
Same no.
Time. Motion is adopted.
Thank
carried.
You, Mr. Chairman.
We will, unfortunately, we will not be able to do the DWI bill. Then that will be heard at the next hearing. Meeting adjourned.